Journey Through the Light and Back, Mellon Thomas Benedict's incredible story of his near-death experience. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. This will be an amazing night. In 1982, Mellon Thomas died of terminal brain cancer. Survived to talk about it. While in hospice care, Mellon died or was about without vital signs for at least an hour and a half before he returned to his body. Mellon is one of the most studied near-death cases in the world. He has taken part in more research think tanks than any other near-deather. Since his near-death experience, Mellon Thomas has devoted himself to scientific research projects. And here he is back on Coast to Coast. Almost 2 years, Mellon. Good to have you back.
Well, thanks, George, for having me on. It's fun to be on the air with you.
How are you feeling?
Fantastic.
And amazing. Truly amazing story. Mellon, tell us a little bit. You know, since you were last on, last July of 2007, lots of new people coming to this program. Tell us a little bit about you and your life and what happened.
Sure. Back in late 1981, I was diagnosed with a terminal brain cancer. It was inoperable and incurable at the time, and I was given 6 to 8 months to live. And I was someone who was completely unprepared for this. I had, in many ways, I had no spiritual foundation. I didn't even believe in God. I wasn't even an atheist. I wasn't even interested in that sort of thing. And certainly had lived a life of being very self-centered and was completely, you know, caught off guard. And there are other people that know how this feeling is. Why me? And, of course, I blamed everyone in the universe, including God, which I didn't believe in. Blamed everyone for this. But the truth is that I know now from my experience that how I developed the cancer, and it was because I was someone who really believed the world was going to end in my time. I really believed that human beings were a cancer on Earth and that we were going to overgraze or explode the world or completely pollute it. And I really didn't believe in my heart of hearts that the world was going to last past my lifetime. And it was that thought deep in my heart that I got to see in my life review that humans are a cancer on the planet, that nature had gone wrong and created a cancer called a human being. And because I thought humans were cancers, I developed that brain cancer. And so I always tell people, be careful of your self-fulfilling prophecies or your worldview. It affects you more than it affects anything else.
There's no question about it. I think the way you live, the way you act will affect you in more ways than one knows. You're a living example of this. How did you fight it? How did you come back?
I didn't fight it. I was totally crushed and completely unprepared for this. I was told by by an oncologist that if I did do chemo radiation, as they suggested, I'd be a vegetable by about the third session.
Oh,
and
God.
So he said, he actually closed the door and he said, I'd just go home and make peace. Make your peace with the world while you have time. And at the time, I did not want to go home and die. That would have been the worst thing in the world for me. And so I felt very lost. I was a self-employed artist at the time. And just by, you know, grace, a friend of mine introduced me to a woman who had hospice training and volunteered to be my caretaker. And I moved away and went into a hospice situation, which, you know, before all this happened, I'd never heard the word hospice. I never heard the word near death. I wasn't into metaphysics and all that sort of stuff. And so I was, I really believed that when you died, the light went out and that was it. But at the same time, I was a very unhappy camper. I was a very angry person and really, really tested my hospice caretaker because unbeknownst to me, till I got into the situation, she was a Christian and I was not. And God bless her, she many times wanted me to pray for my soul, which would only piss me off when we'd argue. I'd argue at her. And I remember one point in which she really wanted me to pray for my soul, and I cussed her out and blessed her out, double barrels, gave her everything, and with whatever strength I had, I stormed out of the house, walked to the end of the sidewalk, and realized, where are you going? You're already at the end of the road. And I can tell you, walking back, was the longest walk I ever took. Walking back to that house and knocking on the door. And, of course, she opened the door and took me back in. And after that, she never asked me to pray again, and we never argued again. I was not a very happy camper at all.
Millen, what does imminent death feel like when you're going through that? I mean, do you know you're dying? Can you feel that impending death?
I was very lucky in that my illness did not involve a lot of constant pain. There were episodes of total pain in which my entire being became total pain, but those would pass. There were blackouts and things like that. But how it felt to me, basically from the moment the doctor told me that I was terminal, I felt like I was on a train that was leaving. And I was on this train I couldn't get off of, and I was just leaving.
One-way ticket.
Mm-hmm.
In the time that you were dead, do you recollect strange things that occurred? Because it changed you when you came back.
Yes, absolutely. The day I died was early in the morning, and I found myself suddenly outside of my body with darkness all around me, looking at my body. And it was the strangest thing because it was so vivid. It's just like being here. And I just found myself looking at my body with this sort of wavy light leaving it. And I was very confused. And in my confusion, I ran down the hall and tried to wake up my hospice caretaker, and I couldn't. I couldn't wake her up. And then I found myself back in the room again watching my body die. And then at probably what you would consider at the moment of death, my life review began, which what we call now is a life review. I didn't know what it was then. But a review of my life began ticking away from the moment of my death all the way back to even before my birth, even into prenatal, because I learned that fetuses are very, very conscious. And as my life ticked away and all around me, scenes of my life were very vivid. I could feel things. I could see things from both sides. I could see all the good things I'd done and all the things that I'd done out of just ignorance. And I could also see that I had built a wall around me that wouldn't let love in. I realized at that moment I had never known what love was, and I could see all the people that had tried to love me, and it didn't get through to me, and what a missed opportunity that was. And then as my life kept ticking back and back into my childhood, I saw so many things that happened because of the way family dynamics are. My father was an alcoholic, and as my life kept ticking back and ticking back, it actually got worse and worse because as a small child, my biological father was a violent alcoholic. Huh. And there were many episodes of where we thought we were going to die. And it just got worse and more intense. And these are all the things you forget, you put away, you suppress in your subconscious. All of this was coming out, and I couldn't stop it. And it felt like hell. And then I found myself in my mother's belly, and very, very conscious. Fetuses are very conscious, and the images of my father beating her while she was carrying me.
Oh, my.
Every time he hit her, it hurt me, and then all of her fear of thinking she was going to die was running through me. And my worldview was set before I was born because of this. My worldview I got from being inside my mother was that this was going to be a dangerous, bad world, and that men were bad. Men were very dangerous beings, and that I was about to be born into all this. And this actually led to something that happened, I think, within the in the first year of my life. It's a story my mother used to tell. But I was a crib death, you know, sudden infant death.
Yeah.
And I believe, really believe from my experience, what I saw was that sometimes when children come into this kind of an environment, this kind of world, they can't take it. They just want to, they check out, and that's what I did. And my mother and my father rushed me to the hospital. I was actually pronounced dead, and my mother actually watched them wheel me away and on a little gurney. And the story is she came back into the waiting room, and for the first time ever, she saw my father on his knees praying. And I believe I had a near death at that time, because the image for me was this little baby on hands of light being pushed up to a light, and then I came back. And so that was probably a near death experience there that I had completely forgot. My mother didn't know about that part. And so the life review was pretty terrible the farther back I went. And then suddenly my life review was over, and I was lost and in my soul crying for help. What do I do now? What do I do now? Is this the way it ends? And literally an angel appeared to me, and I didn't believe in angels. I thought they were figurines. And this golden angel actually appeared, and I said, "Are you the angel of death?" that's all I could think.
That's the attitude you had, I guess. Then,
yeah. Are you the angel of death? My God, what a surprise! And the angel said, "No, I am Mellon, and I'm like the feeling was I'm like your guardian angel, and
which you never knew existed when you were living."
Or even believed in.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. I thought all those were myths. And with the help of this angel, I was taken to what we call the light. And when I got to the light, I guess I do what all non-believers do, including atheists. I said, "Are you God?" You know, "Are you God? Oh my God." And the feeling was euphoric, absolutely euphoric. And I've had so many years now to go back to the light and learn more that I can actually explain what the euphoric feeling is that the near-deathers have. And it's the feeling of leaving this world behind and leaving the gravity and the pressures and the survival that we're all caught in. We don't even think about it. We're all caught in survival every day of our life, like everything else in nature. And to drop that and all of that is an absolute euphoric experience. I didn't know this, but many years later, I think around 1985 or 7 in there somewhere, I attended a lecture by P.M.H. Atwater, one of the great researchers, and
giant in the business.
Yeah, that's when I first realized, my God, maybe I had a near-death experience. So I talked with Phyllis, and she took me under her wing and literally discovered me in the backwaters. And then she introduced me to Ken Ring, who was interested in my case. And they found that there were some unusual things about my near-death experience, and one of which was that there was a moment in front of the light where I said, out of nowhere, I said, "Can we stop right here? Can we stop right now? I want to understand this. I have some questions." And the light said, "Of course."
And really?
So
okay.
This is the
so
first.
So let you do that.
Well, this is the first recorded case they know of where the experience became an interactive experience. And at that moment, I realized that life is interactive, and so is your death experience. It's completely interactive. You can be someone who just gets on the train and takes the ride, or you can be interactive. And when the light said that, there was no pressure. There was no, pressure of any kind. And I had a lot of questions. And so I talked with the light, and the light was answering my questions in a way in which I understood them, me personally understood them. And I had a lot of questions about everything. And at one point, I ran out of questions. And I tell people that I live now with all of my questions answered to my satisfaction, but by no means do I know everything, because I think every one of us has our own set of unique questions to explore the universe with. But for me, all of my great questions were answered to my satisfaction and to my understanding. And it's been that way ever since.
That's amazing. Mellon, as we approach the bottom of the hour, we'll get more into what you learned on the other side. But as you evolved over the years, Did this event that occur, this after-death experience, did you subsequently, when you came back to life, and even to this day, are you still learning things because of that experience?
Well, I didn't know this until I met PMH Atwater and Ken Ring, but I go back to the light every day. I didn't know that I'm the only one they knew that was doing this.
Yeah, okay.
And I've subsequently been tested, and it's been a joy to have been a guinea pig for many years. But I thought everyone was doing it, and I go back to the light every day, or at will, if I need to, for doing consultations or inventions and things like that. And I've been tested. I can invent on command.
The lessons that you learned out there, who gave them to you?
Well, I call it the great light. It's the great self. There's only one of us, actually, in this world and in this universe, and it is the great self. It is the sum total of all of us and everything that's ever been. The concept of God is simplistic, or a white man in the sky with a beard, very, very simplistic to what's really going on. But it is the self. It is our self. And it is the sum total of everything that's ever been learned in this universe.
The fact that you did this and you've come back and you've learned, you've trained people, you've talked to others, you know, you have been studied literally with a microscope. What's the biggest lesson for those of us right now on this planet, living, breathing, who are mired in everything that's been going on over the past so many years? What would you tell us all?
That creation has just begun, and the future is so bright. Believe it, the future is so bright for humanity, and we can get into the details later.
Yeah.
But what I learned is that we've already made it. We just haven't realized it. We've already made it. And not only is our survival and future possible, it's inevitable.
Do you grasp life today?
I love life, and it's kicked me in the ass a bunch of times, but I love life, and I understand the time of history that we're in, and I have a very good perspective, even with what we might call the negativities of life. And believe me, I've been kicked around as much as anybody else.
Does that bother you now when you see, because you've changed, you've made this huge metamorphosis, this shift. Does it bother you when somebody comes into a room and you know they're negative, they're down on everything?
Not so much, because quite often when someone's negative or being mean to you, it's not even about you, it's about their life. So if you don't take most of this personally, and also, part of stress relief in the world is relieving stress in others. Sometimes a kind word will change the meanest person. Sometimes you just have to get away from them, though.
I call them energy zappers. Others have called them psychic vampires, Melon.
Parasites, yeah.
They do have an incredible ability to just make you just empty energy-wise. You just feel weak around these people.
Yes, that's why you certain people like that you just get away from.
By going to the other side, is it all about energy?
No, it's about so much more. You know, what I learned was that there's so much more than even life and death. We're still dealing with survival and what we call life and death. There's so much more than even life and death to discuss.
All right, well, you stay with us. Melon's website, of course, is melon-thomas.com, melon-thomas.com, M-E-L-L-E-N. It's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Back in a moment, because we'll learn what he learned from the other side when we come right back. And our guest tonight is Melon Thomas Benedict, author, of course, of two books, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Other Side, Journey Through the Light and Back. If you'd like to order, it's 800-BOOKLOG or Amazon.com. for these incredible stories. We'll be back with Melon in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast with Melon Thomas Benedict. Melon, what are some of the patented inventions that you brought back from the other side? Tell me about this. This is an incredible story.
Well, I've been quite a prolific inventor since my near-death experience. I Every time I would go to the light, I would always ask, is there something I can bring back, something tangible? You might call me a nuts and bolts channeler.
Yeah.
I'm not a philosopher. You know, I believe, you know, six pack and two humans, you've got philosophy. But I always wanted to, with my gift of access to the light, I always wanted to bring back things that were tangible, testable, and so that's what I've become very good at. And so some of the inventions have been tools, toys. I invented a microscope for studying live cells with light, because, you know, light affects everything. So how do you study the effect of light on something when the very light in the microscope is, in fact, affecting what you're looking at, if you're looking mm-hmm. at live cells and things like that. So, but my main thing is something I've been working on most of the time, and it's a passion of my life, and I hope to be working on it the rest of my life. And it involved the last question I ever asked the light. And when I was with the light and I had run out of questions, and I thought I was done, the light said to me, "And what was your first question?" And what the light and what the light meant was that there's a time in our life, young or old, there's a time in our life when we have one significant question that is sort of comes from our soul. And that is the main question of your life. And for me, when the light reminded me of that, it reminded me of when I was a child. And when I was a child, I used to ask, and maybe this is because I was raised for part of my life in Catholic boarding schools and told I was going to go to hell for eternity. So you start contemplating deep things at, exactly. at an early age. So I used to wonder, well, why do we grow old and die? I mean, why, if there is a God, why would he create this pathetic little lives in which you tend to live just long enough to get your head together, make a little money, and you die? So my question during childhood was, I was always asking everybody, especially if you were a doctor, I would say, why do we grow old and die? Why do we grow old and die? And literally, that I bugged everybody with that question, and actually thought I was going to be a doctor and study all that because of my because this was my question. But puberty hit, and I got interested in girls and music and all that sort of thing, and kind of forgot about it. But when the light reminded me, I said, Oh yes. Why do we grow old and die? And two columns of light came out of the light, one to my right and one to my left. And out of the column to the right stepped a short, skinny guy that looked like he was from India with kind of a little turban thing on his head. Mm-hmm. And all I heard or saw was the word Denshaw. And it turned out to be Darius Denshaw, who people can look up, who was one of the pioneers of healing with light. And he stepped out of the light and started educating me on how to heal with light and light waves and colors of light and things like that. And he educated me. And then out of the column on the left stepped a short, portly guy with a beret on and a funny mustache, and it turned out to be Walter Russell. And, you know, at University of Light. Who I'd never heard of these guys in my life. So, and I actually didn't know it was Walter Russell until PMH Atwater took me up to the University of Light and I saw his photo. I went, oh my God.
And then you knew, yeah.
But, so he educated me on starlight, the essence of light, and he did this by drawing pictures in the air that we call fractal geometry. And I could see in the fractal geometry everything, and I could understand what he was saying. And he was educating me on the essence of life and the universe's electrons and electron transport, and just educated me on the essence of life and regeneration. And just as stars can regenerate, we can regenerate. And we do that to a certain point because we are made of light at our core. And that we come from the light, we're made of light, and we return to the light. It's all about light. And so he educated me with formulas and things that I indelibly remembered to the decimal point. And so that led to, after my experience, I was, you know, I would write all this down, and I would revisit the light, and I didn't understand. I was like writing down what I was seeing, but I didn't really understand that it was a very deep science. Of course, no one around me knew what I was talking about. know, they, and I kept saying, we're going to heal with light, and we're going to do this. And they, oh, yeah, okay, Mr. E.T., you know.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until after Ken Ring and some other people got interested in me that I was actually able to talk to scientists and first molecular biologists. And then when I started talking with quantum biologists, the field of quantum biology, which is looking at your nuclear state, your atoms as biology, because you are first and foremost made of atoms. And it was there that all of a sudden they go, we know what he's talking about. And he's and then it took a little while to get people to start doing a little bit of funding and okay, let's give this guy a chance. But once we started building prototypes and stuff, it seemed that I had hit it right on the money. From the first experiments, and by the way, every story I'm telling you has been videotaped. I'm one of the most documented people in the world. It's been videotaped by multiple cameras and or audio taped for intellectual property rights. And this began my course. I was given a second chance to live when many, many great people greater than me weren't for some reason. That's between them and the light.
And their lights in their life sometimes, Melon, cut short at even a young age.
Mm-hmm. And I was given a second chance, and I had wasted the first life I had. And so I was given a second chance, and I was determined to work on giving others second chances, because there's always a second chance. And the one thing that really got me focused was that after I survived and after, you know, I left hospice and went home and was later tested several months later, because at first I didn't want to be tested. I didn't want to know. I was feeling okay.
Right.
And I didn't want to know, but I was talked into getting tested again by the same doctors. And I remember the doctor coming in and putting up the second scan, and he said, well, this is very interesting. And I said, what is it? And he says, well, there's no trace now. And I said, it's a miracle. He said, no, we call these spontaneous remissions. And I said, well, what is that? And he said, well, we really don't understand, but there's a lot of evidence. In fact, he said, in medical records, there's every known human condition has had a spontaneous remission, from adults growing new teeth to incurable diseases disappearing to MS to blind people seeing again. And they can't explain it. They think it has something to do with the immune system, blah, blah. But as he was, as he showed the scan and he said, you see here, here's the cancer. And had we irradiated or operated, you would always have a lesion. This would always be noticeable in every scan the rest of your life. He said, look here, there's nothing.
It was just gone.
Yeah, this is just one of those cases where it was a complete spontaneous remission. And I said, I thought at that moment, what is the physics of this? Because if it really happens in flesh, there is a physics to it that we need to understand.
I agree.
And if this happens in every known condition, then I want to spend the rest of my life studying this.
Regardless of why it went away, there is a physics or a science behind it.
And so for me, God's magic is physics. The rest is hocus pocus. And if this magic is around us and in us every day, and we don't even notice that everything about us is magic. In fact, this entire universe, if you listen to the experts in different periods of time, is impossible. Everything that we have and we see is impossible. And here we are. So the physics is the pure magic, and I see it that way. And so I was very, very lucky to a few years later to have met a man. I was introduced by a bookstore owner to a man who turned out to be a billionaire, and he and I became very good friends. And we would sit around chatting, do you think this is real? Do you think that's real? And he would say, why don't you go find out? So for the next 7 years, I was able to travel the world, you know, carte blanche.
He funded these missions. So.
And would put doctors to go with me, and I would take multiple cameras. I was looking for anything that would claim to be regeneration, and that was from technologies to healers to manifestors, anybody.
Was he doing this to get answers for himself, Melon, through you?
I think so. I was He was rather old at the time, and he funded me until he died, and then, you know, the family wasn't interested. But that got me started, and that got people to pay attention to me. And but it was a marvelous time in which I've seen miracles. I've seen miracle workers and the inconsistency of that. And my idea was, even if you're a greatest healer in the world, how many people can you see a day? And that most people in the world will never take spirulina. Most people will not meet the Pope. Most people will never ever meet the Dalai Lama. So right, what that's about the true. Rest of us, you know? And so it wasn't a straight line. Let me tell you, it was kind of a zigzag line. But eventually, with the help of having some think tanks and some brilliant people saying, you're on to this and this is what it is, I ended up in what's called the field of phototherapy and tissue optics.
Now, what is that?
I'm in a very advanced form of phototherapy, which, you know, phototherapy's really caught on, but when I was first into it, it wasn't much at all back in the old days. It's very well understood now. It's very popular, in fact, with anti-aging and baby boomers, actually, for photofacials and things like that. You know,
okay, all right.
Getting rid of wrinkles and things like that. But there's so much more that you can do with this, and I was blessed to have the kind of funding over the years that was not venture capital, that wasn't forcing me to do anything. So I spent 12 years in just pure and research, and will be the rest of my life, without ever having to produce a product. But we produced many prototypes. We did a lot of testing. And then finally, in late 2008, we have begun to put out products based on my discoveries. And it's in the field of phototherapy because this is what Walter Russell taught me. It's what Barry Stinshaw taught me also, is that there's so much you can do with light. Side shine it on people. It can have specific enzymatic effects on the human body. I actually patented a way to recharge the human body like a battery, because to a quantum biologist, we are a wet cell battery. And basically, if you don't have the right electron charge in the body, your cells are not strong enough to regenerate. And you tend to run out of what we call organ reserves at about 40 years old. That's what your mother gave you.
Yeah.
And that's when aging, what we call aging, starts to show. And in quantum biology, we call it entropy.
Probably starts even earlier, doesn't it?
It can, depending on your life. You know, and how you've challenged your body, and of course genetics and things like that have something to do with it. And since then, I've really become quite a studier and expert in who lives to be 100 and why. And it may surprise you, and it's one of my more popular lectures that I give. Putting that together with how do you get the body to go back into regeneration? We have done spectacular work, and we're just now releasing a series of products and to the public. And although I've done a lot of medical work, we chose to go into the wellness and spa industry first, because honestly, that's where most of the healing's going on right now. It's in wellness centers and spas. And chiropractic's offices is where most of the healing is going on. There's not a lot of healing going on in hospitals, and I'm not putting anybody down or anything, but I think we know that's the truth.
No, they don't. They don't seem to cure the problem.
Most of our diseases are stress-related, one way or the other, environmental stresses, life stresses.
Economic, yeah.
Yeah, economic, too, can ruin your health. And then also the part of the aging process is that the hormones stop modulating. And so the first things to go, and you notice this as you begin the aging curve, is the first thing to go is all the feel-good stuff, the serotonin, melatonin, the human growth hormone. And suddenly the shine comes off of life. You don't feel connected anymore. You have moods and depressions. And this is a natural part of aging. But the good news is there's a lot that can be done about this. And so with my form of phototherapy, this is what we have focused on. We can give you the equivalent of a full night's sleep in 30 minutes. And it's only when nobody's sleeping now, young or old, and that's because the stresses of life are 24/7 now. And what most people don't realize, that the biggest pollution in the world is noise pollution. It's not what's coming out of chimneys. noise pollution does a whole lot to your biology. Just because you've tuned it out, it's like, you know, if you live next to an expressway, you tend to tune it out, but your biology can't. It's always reacting to it. And the second biggest pollution in the world is electromagnetic pollution.
And we're being bombarded by that.
And that's the cause, ever since Tesla, you know, and Tesla knew nothing about biology. And quite, you know, his AC motors and all that are and AC electricity is one of the things that are wearing us down. But the electromagnetic pollution is everywhere. There is a lot you can do about it. The good news is there's a lot you can do about it. But the truth is that you have to regenerate faster than you degenerate. You have to stay stronger. And this is easily doable now. And this is where my products are focused. It's in giving you the sleep you need so you can get physiological repair. And that includes physiological brain repair. Because people aren't sleeping, they're not going down into the deep brain waves at night. That's why they keep waking up. That's why they wake up tired. And did you know that just driving to work is enough to set off cortisol and lower your immune system?
Well, did you know that most heart attacks, they say, are caused or started when you're in traffic?
It's a tremendous assault on you. And then the drive home from 4 to 6 at night is when your adrenals need to be resting. It's really siesta time in civilized societies. But the drive home is enough to set off the cortisol and other things in your body that you are not going to sleep. You're not going to sleep, and this is leaving everybody in a form of jet lag.
And if you're a road rager, Melon, you're in deep trouble.
Oh, yeah, you hurt yourself more than you ever hurt anybody else. So what I've done is focus on how to help people do this, and in an easy way, non-invasive, using very special wavelengths of light and LEDs and ways of modulating light that are absolutely amazing, and everyone gets it immediately. And in every program, everybody gets a free photo facial. Actually, people can see a difference in their face right after the first session, and that's a side effect of getting the body to go into regeneration.
Now, when all this occurred to you, and you picked up this kind of knowledge, obviously you went out and did your homework too, right?
Well, you have to. You know, the other side can give you ideas, but you have to do the work. You have to go do the fundraising. You have to convince people, because just having access or, you know, having keys to the city doesn't mean you can control anybody, and you probably have to pay for your cup of coffee too.
So, you know, when you're on the other side, did you ever come back with the rationale of, what the heck are we doing here? What's this all about, Alfie?
Oh, yes. That was one of the questions I asked on the other side, and it may shock people. I literally asked, okay, what's the plan? And the light just lovingly laughed and said, there is no plan. There never was.
What?
You were given this universe to make of it what you will, and you're free to do that. And so what's really important is not thinking what God wants you to do or what, you know, the universe wants you to do. Is the only meaning there is in life is the meaning you give to life. The only meaning to any God you believe in is the meaning you give to that.
Hold it right there, Melon Thomas Benedict. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We're with Melon Thomas Benedict right here on Coast to Coast AM. And Melon, this experience had a profound effect on you, to the point that you have now picked up, and I don't know whether it was just knowledge or was it guidance, where you've learned things about, you know, the future, earth changes, your own life, destiny for all of us. Are you almost like on a mission?
Well, I'm on a mission of health, and also a mission of what is called self-initiation. We're coming into a period now where, especially, you know, the example is what just happened to the economy. Why are we all listening to these people? Why did we listen to them? They turned out they didn't know that much, and they were manipulating us. And I think a lot of huge mistakes were made. So we're coming into a point now of self-initiation, and that's if I'm on any mission, it's to create heaven on earth.
Well, you're getting there. Now, Are there other people like you out there doing the same thing? Is this almost like an army of people that have died and have come back?
Well, in one of my visits with the light, I was told that the near-death experience, this is, you know, way back then, I was told that the near-death experience would become more and more popular and it would have an effect on the entire world when a critical mass was hit where all these people have died and come back and are telling you that it's, you know, there's a lot more going on than what we think. It's getting over the fear of death is one of the first phases of self-initiation, because once you get over the fear of death and realize that you have been alive forever already and you will be alive forever no matter what, in fact, no one can manipulate you. The old fears don't manipulate you anymore. Although I have no fear of death, I respect life more and more. I used to skydive and rock climb and all that, and after my near-death experience, I respect life so much that I wouldn't dare take a chance on throwing it away on something so frivolous. So it's given me respect for life, not a fear. And as we move into the future, we're going to start realizing that this whole thing about prophecy is most of, I was told when I'm with the light that all the true ancient prophecies will end in our lifetime and they will be no more. And they all have to deal with the end of the world, don't they?
They sure do.
And we're going to get past that point of this end of the world. And in fact, you know, the end of the world has a history. People should check it out. How many times have prophets told people there was going to be an end of the world?
Every civilization. You know, everyone.
and also the odd thing about prophecy is that most prophets have not ever been right. And in fact, if they get one thing right in their life, that's a career. And do you know who's been more accurate about predicting the future than prophets?
I would say, well, this is a quiz, right? But I would say Edgar Cayce was one of them.
He was interesting, but there have been people more accurate than him. And
Nostradamus?
No, not at all.
He's in close range.
Not at all. I was shown that the people that have been the most accurate about predicting the future have been the fantasy writers.
Good point.
They have been more accurate than anybody. And I was given a lesson of, say, Jules Verne. Remember
right.
Jules Verne?
Absolutely.
And in my book, it's called The Jules Verne Effect. And I was shown that Jules Verne wrote about things that did not exist. Technologies did not exist in his time. And all the children that read those books went out and invented those things and more. Isn't that interesting?
But something happened to him, Ellen. I don't know whether he was a time traveler or a remote viewer or what, but something happened to him to allow him to have a vision of the future.
Absolutely. And so I was also taught about Star Trek, the Star Trek effect on the planet. Who was it? Gene Roddenberry. Unbelievable the material he pulled in. And I was shown that at any given moment on planet Earth now, Star Trek is being shown somewhere. And it's constantly in consciousness. And I was told that everything you see on Star Trek will be manifested. And the children that watch this will make all that, including the replication technologies, all of that is coming. And some of it's here now.
Or absolutely. I mean, during even though Dick Tracy had that watch he talked into, Star Trek also had those little handheld devices that were like cell phones.
And didn't they heal with light, too, amazingly
yep.
fast?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So the thing about prophecies is that we've got to get over this end of the world stuff and get past it. I was also shown, and I honestly believe most biblical scholars know this, and some of them tell you the truth, is that most of the prophecies you've ever heard about, the ancient ones, already have happened. They were written for people in their own times and were fulfilled in their own times.
But this is what concerns me about prophecy, though, in end times.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, one of them is going to get it right.
Well, there is not going to be an end times, and that's why this is all going to end within the next couple of generations. We're going to actually transform. This is why the near-death experience is really big on helping us transform. And we're going to transform over the next 75 to 100 years into completely different creatures than we know now.
Is it going to be gradual? Or?
Well, it's been gradual. In fact, the amazing thing that I was shown is that we're technically there now. We're at a time that's never happened before in history. We're technically at a time in history where we can transcend survival en masse. We can technically clothe, comfort, feed, and educate every human on Earth right now. And this has never happened before, and it will continue to grow. And so we're in a most beautiful time, actually, although, you know, there's still a lot of all kinds of people trying to manipulate us, but that's been from day one. And manipulation is something that all of nature does, by the way. Flowers do it, trees do it, bugs do it, you know, all God's creatures do it. We always try to manipulate things to our benefit. So, trying to manipulate things is as natural as it gets.
No, but when you say, Mellon, we're not going to have end times. Don't worry. This is not going to get... But you're not saying we're not going to get hit by an asteroid one day or some kind of life-threatening thing happens to us, right?
I was shown the mass potential of the Earth, the beautiful thing is, no, we will not. The interesting thing is that the Earth will die, though. The sun will die and the Earth will die eventually, and we have about another good 10,000 years on Earth. But in the next 400 years, we will begin star seeding other planets. We're like the little birds that can't stay in the nest forever. Our manifest destiny is to take life with us into the stars.
As they did probably with us,
yes,
maybe.
As where we came from originally. And so this is our manifest destiny. And believe me, once we have the replication technologies and diamonds and gold don't mean anything anymore, and free energy is a metaphor for free spirit. It's not actually being suppressed like people think, because when a time is right for an idea, nothing can suppress it. So free energy...
Even if they try.
Even if they try. Just like, you know, all the blacksmiths tried to hold back the automobile and they couldn't. So when the time is right, and the time is more right than ever at this point for these new energy devices to come out, and believe me, if we don't do it, China will, somebody will. And so these are all about to pop out in the next 50 years, and probably in the next 5 or 10 years, actually, we'll be seeing these things. And they're that close to manifesting and being here. So the future, so free energy is about free spirit. Are we ready to be free? If we are, then all these ideas that represent freedom will manifest.
Did you, prior to the near-death experience, did you have this outlook of life? I don't think you did you?
No, I didn't. And I believe the world was a very dangerous, negative place. I believe that the world was going to end in my lifetime. And I believed humans were dark and evil. And
some are.
I have seen people that you might consider evil. But then I asked this question on the other side. I asked, why are humans so dark and evil? And the light turned into a mandala, if you know what that is, or like one of those big round cathedral windows.
Right.
It turned into a mandala of human souls, and I was taken into it. And I was allowed, it seemed like, to look into every human soul, including my own. And I tell you, I saw no evil whatsoever. And then I was shown something incredible. The next thing the light showed me was the great and mighty mosquito. Did you know that the mosquito to this day kills and ravages human beings and animals more than all the human wars on Earth?
Absolutely. And I still wonder what its purpose is.
And the light asked me, is the mosquito evil? No, it is not.
Other than being food for, let's say, birds and stuff, what does it do?
Exactly. And you can say there are some humans that are that way.
True.
See what I mean?
Absolutely.
So the great and mighty mosquito has had more of an effect on humanity and history than people even imagine. And to this day, if you check World Health, it's still the biggest killer of humanity on Earth.
Would you call yourself spiritual or religious right now?
Well, I'm not religious at all, but I do have a great spiritual life now, but it is not at all religious.
Have you put together that thought process of how we got here? And you know, even though you said earlier there's no plan here, but what put it all together? There had to be this godlike figure somewhere, this divine intervention. Something somewhere is intelligent behind all this design, don't you think?
Well, I can only tell you what the light has shared with me, and that I was told that the universe is not an intellectual exercise, and that if you try to understand it intellectually, you will miss it. It's like a rainbow. If you're only looking at purple, say intellectual, you're going to miss all the rest. Or if you're only down in red, you know, hedonism, partying, then you're going to miss all the rest of it. The universe was not, it was not a intellectual exercise. And so if you try to look through it through that lens, you will not understand it. You will understand some of it, but you will not understand the fullness of it. You have to look at the whole rainbow. And so we're just beginning to understand that. And that even the concept of no beginning and no end seems mysterious to us.
Sure.
But that is the truth. There was no beginning and there is no end to this. And in fact, the very body you're in right now, if you just look at your hand, your body has already been alive forever. It didn't come from anything dead.
We're made with stardust, aren't we?
We are. We're absolute pure stardust, and that is always in creation and recreation. So it actually is incredibly wonderful and mystical and magical in that way. And that we can't understand everything at this point is part of our process. And that the other gift we've been given is that you may never ever find out everything. And there will always be a mystery. And I have come to love mysteries. I don't try to know everything now. In fact, I crossed a line many years ago where I know too much. And I tell people, whatever ignorance you have left, cherish it. You will miss it when it's gone.
It's kind of good to be inquisitive once in a while, though.
I love a mystery, yes.
Mm-hmm. Are you bullish on our future?
I'm very, very positive. We have been through these cycles many, many times before, but they just they tend to get bigger and bigger. Now, because we're a global society now, it's a global issue. And I think as Peter Russell has said, issues are soul size now, and everything we do affects everyone else. And this is also what's going to pull us together like never before.
Of all the prophets or the psychics that you've dealt with in your life, people that you know about, is there anybody that impresses you?
I'm not really into psychics and stuff like that, actually. Gene Roddenberry still blows my mind.
Right.
And Edgar Cayce, and I've been to the Edgar Cayce Center and lectured there and reviewed his materials. He was amazing. And there are amazing people like that around that can retrieve information, useful information that can help you. But I don't, what I learned on the other side is that what people call psychic really isn't psychic. It turns out that the most psychic part of yourself is your first brain. It looks like the reptilian brain.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that is because everything is psychic, from bacteria to you. And that is what we call psychic ability is actually located in the lower brain. And it was originally a survival mechanism to sense danger, sense water, and it all has to do with the very natural process of what you might think is psychic. And a friend asked me once, because I told him something, you must be psychic, and I said, no, you don't have to be psychic to smell the fish.
Yeah,
you know
exactly.
But
you're perceptive.
Yeah, and so when someone says they're psychic and they just tell me what I already know, like my car is green or this, that, and the other, that's not psychic. That's called telepathy, wireless communication, which is one of the easiest thing to do is read someone's mind and go through their files. And people seem to be blown away if you can tell them something they already know. Isn't that funny?
Yeah. And by the way, tell me about what you've been saying lately about feeding the world, which one day is going to be very important.
Yes. In my book, it's called Tricks with Fish. And remember the story of Jesus on the mountain feeding the masses with the fish.
Exactly.
This is replication technology that's coming in. in the future, in the not too distant future, we will be able to replicate food as much as we want. In fact, in the future, we don't drill for water anymore. The people of the future go, we drill in the ground for water. We just make water any way we want. We, in what you might call replicators. And you can make it, it's all natural because there's only nature in the universe, electrons and atoms. And so that literally the things that you've seen on Star Trek, replicating food and water, is quite common in the future, and there is no shortage of anything, which really takes us out of survival. And once we're out of survival, you don't need oil companies, you don't need kings, you don't need any of that stuff. So Tricks with Fish, or Feeding the World, is actually going to become easier and easier. And the techniques, you won't even see big farms in the future. They disappear.
Interesting. I've always thought we should create and build, Mellon, a huge dehumidifier that sucks water out of the atmosphere.
Oh, totally possible. Totally possible. There's no end to energy, really, and the way we can manipulate it. And you can make water any way you want it. But the amazing thing is that we could be in desalination right now, big time, for everybody that lives near the coast. I mean,
we should be. Why aren't we?
Well, Europe's already doing it. You know, there's these giant ships that have been built.
Right. Saudi Arabia is doing it.
Spain, they bring these ships in, park them right at the dock, and they're huge desalination plants that supply whole cities.
L.A. should be doing it.
Well, all of California should be doing it.
Absolutely. Well, they'll probably be forced to do it.
They will be. That's another interesting thing about nature and the universe is that change happens when it's necessary. There's a resistance factor that I appreciate in the universe, and even the fundamentalists represent a resistance factor. There's a resistance factor in everything, a push-pull effect. But when critical mass is hit, the change will happen.
That's with life, too.
Absolutely.
Isn't it, Mellon?
And it'll happen in your life. It'll happen in California. And when the time is right, boy, it just happens.
Yeah.
But sometimes we push it a bit far and we suffer a little bit before we make the change. But you can take the positive course or the negative course to get there, but they both lead to the same place.
Take a moment before the break to tell us about your books and where you can get them.
Thanks.
We're Journey Through the Light and Back, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Other Side. Both available still, Mellon?
Yes. We're in pre-order now. And they'll actually be out in about 3 months, but the publishers and everybody, they do these pre-order things, so it'll be out soon.
Very good. Mellon-Thomas.com is the website. So do you travel much, speaking engagements?
I try not to. I'm not really a teacher. I love teachers and saints. I'm neither. And I'm really a shaman, and my real mission is bringing in practical application of higher consciousness. I do like entertaining people, and I will in the future do more of that. I believe we can entertain through multimedia and make things real fun.
Good point. We'll be back with more. Let's get into life after death, reincarnation, in just a moment. We're with Mellon Thomas Benedict. I'm George Norrie. This, of course, is Coast to Coast AM. Mellon, how do we really know that there is life after death? What if there was just some bizarre experience that, you really weren't dead, but your mind created this dream image of what happened? How do we know?
Well, I think you have to find out for yourself, honestly. It's like anything else. Until you've had the experience, you will know. And we have more and more people now reporting the same experience. And it's one of those things where you have to try it for yourself.
you got to be there.
Yeah.
Well, reincarnation, something that I've always believed in. I don't know why I've always believed it, but how about you?
Well, I never even heard of the concept, basically, until I was educated by the Light. The Light said that, almost every culture on Earth believes in some form of reincarnation, including Christians.
True.
And what I was shown was that the spiritual explanation or the New Age explanation or the spiritual explanation of reincarnation is rather flimsy. But the quantum mechanics and the quantum physics are solid, and this will be a science in the future. And so I was educated on the quantum nature of the reality of reincarnation, and that this is more real and more dynamic than people imagine.
Do you think that we should all live for the moment?
Oh, sure, because, you know, it's been said many times, you know, and I'll put it my way, there is no past, there is no future. It is always going to be now. It's always now. So when we learn to live in the now, not live in some perceived past or some perceived future, the now becomes perfect, and then the past and the present can be perfect. And as far as the past goes, history, all the history books are always changing. If you're a history scholar, you know the story of history is always changing. It's not set in stone at all. And, of course, the history books are written by the winners. So the myth of a past is an illusion. And one interesting thing is that if you look around you today, we still have Stone Age people living with us. The past, you know, what we call the past is still in the now. We have the Aborigines. We also have people that are more advanced than we are on the planet, that you might call them futurists. They're living here now. We have dinosaurs are still living with us in one form or another, you know, birds and things like mm-hmm. that. It's all here now. The past, the present, and the future are here right in front of us. We just don't notice it.
Science is beginning to talk, Mellon, about multiverses now, more than the dimensions we believe exist. If you've been there, you might believe, I would assume, that there are many more dimensions out
there.
Well,
it's actually very interesting. There are, but understand this, too, that you can create new dimensions just by thinking about them, and that because all thoughts are quanta. All thoughts are real, physical things. And it turns out there is nothing metaphysical in the universe. It's all physical or superphysical. And so your thoughts are true quanta. And so just having a new thought creates a new dimension. So that's like, you know, chasing the tiger by its tail. You know, it's one of those things where did I create this dimension or was it there before I created it? You see what I mean? It becomes very, very trippy, doesn't it?
And what came first?
Yes, the chicken or the egg.
The angels that were there when you died, can you summon them at any moment?
I love this part because most of the angels that we know or experience are angels that we created with our prayers and our desires. We actually can create angels, and we create them when we need them, and then the minute the crisis passes, we forget them. But we've created them, and they are not uncreated, so there's an awful lot of angels that have been created and looking for work.
What about the fallen angels? Did you ever learn about that when you were on the other side?
Yes, and, you know, that's a mental myth that's an intellectual mind myth. No one has fallen. That kind of thing is just a myth of an intellectual mind basically is a division. The one thing I saw was, you know, there's always supposed to have been this battle between the children of the dark and the children of the light. And what that is, what that really, really means, as it was explained to me, is that there is still this division between the conscious and the subconscious, the animal nature of ourselves and the super part of ourselves. And a good metaphor for this that people overlook is the story of Cain and Abel. And I was shown in all the religions what all these metaphors meant. And in the story of Cain and Abel, Cain represented the body, the biology, the animal part of our nature. And, of course, Cain didn't have a good concept of God and always worked hard. and had the lower, what we call the lower nature, but it isn't. It was sacred. And then you have Abel, who was the basic star child, the upper brain. And everything came easy to it, and in fact, to the upper brain, it thinks it created the universe. But the lesson was, and this is the mind-body connection in health, is that if you have a battle going on between your subconscious and your conscious, say your subconscious believes money's not good for some reason, and the conscious wants money, you're going to have a difficult time manifesting. There's going to be a struggle there. But the other thing is the self-talk people do when they talk bad to themselves. You know, I have a friend who plays tennis, and every time he makes a mistake, he says, "Oh, you stupid ass," or, you know, you're ignorant. And he puts his body down. Well, you can actually create a resistance between your subconscious and your conscious, and I'll tell you what, the subconscious will always win. It will take you down. And the example is that Cain killed Abel. It's a very strong message to learn that, and the kahunas teach this the best, I think, you know, the Polynesian kahunas, which I love. They teach this the best. They tell you to get to know yourself. You have what we call a subconscious, a conscious, and a superconscious. And the biggest leap we're ever going to make is just a few millimeters from the lower brain to the higher brain, to get that bridge together where they're working in unison. And even the metaphor in the Bible says, "Where any two of you ask in my name, and it shall be manifest." That's when you get the subconscious and the conscious mind understanding each other, and they get in link, and they become coherent like a laser beam. And manifestation can happen. If we could manifest anything willy-nilly, in an incohesive way, this would be a chaotic, dangerous world to live in. You know, if your neighbor's dog was barking, you go, "Ah, the dog disappears." The truth is that there's a natural way to manifest and a manifestation, and that is you've really got to get to know yourself, and you can change yourself. If your subconscious believes money is bad and your conscious wants it, well, you have to understand why your conscious wants it, and also work with your subconscious to correct those wrong programs that we have that were hardwired probably before you were 6 years old about life and these things. And so that's one of the biggest things you can do, is get to know yourself and become harmonious with yourself. And you're going to find then that manifestation and getting what you truly want can happen much easier. You know, quite often I had a friend who wanted to manifest a Corvette, and he lived in a trailer. And he manifested the Corvette, but then he couldn't afford to put gas in it. You see? So
always consequences, huh?
Yes. And so the battle of the sons of light and the sons of darkness is really a metaphor for what's going on inside of ourselves. And the whole thing about, you know, the 666, if you've got to carry that all the way over, because it came from numerology, and then you've got to add the 666 together, which is 18, which is 9, and that's the number of man. So the beast is within us.
Deeply within us, too.
And we're evolving, and we're coming into the light more and more. You know, there was a great period in the beginning of what we might think is the star period. But before the star period, there was no light at all. So there was great periods of no light at all. And the star period, which we live in now, is a relatively new period to be in. And so we go way back even before the star period in our being, because we've always been here and we've always been a part of this experience. So it's kind of interesting to think about.
You've done some work about pets and people we care about. Tell me about that.
Yeah, you know, it's very, very possible to see loved ones and visit with them and communicate with them and or see them on the other side. Pets become part of us. They become literally a part of us. And many pets actually take on your illness for you. Isn't that interesting? We've seen
sure
it many
is.
Times. Your pets become a part of you, and they will always be a part of you. What the ancients knew, and I've been to third world countries where they honor the ancestors, and they still have a relationship with their ancestors. So even if someone has died, made the transition, you can still have a relationship with that person or that pet. You know, I've had three great dogs in my life. They're all dead now, and it'll be a while before I get a new one. But I still have a relationship with those pets. They still visit me. I can still feel when they jump in the bed with me at night. And I love it. And also, the good thing about pets is, and you can do this with loved ones too, you can reincarnate them again. And I have done this, and I teach in one of my workshops. If you want to get a pet back, you can. You can call it in, and it will.
And you don't have to clone it either.
No, you don't have to clone it. You can get your pet back, and I teach people how to do this. It's the same thing with humans. If you want to be in the same family, you'll quite often find that the grandchild will probably be that parent that died before. And so all this is very possible and very cool. And also, you don't have to reincarnate with anybody you don't want to reincarnate with again, and that's called the end of karma. You don't have to repeat these things.
Well, you know, I think what's amazing with reincarnation are some of the stories that are out there. I remember one where a little boy in the Chicago area claimed that he was a downed World War II pilot. And, you know, he knew about his partner, his co-pilot, everything. Just an amazing story. There's got to be some truth behind it.
Absolutely. And one of the things that's fun to practice is we need to learn how to die conscious and be born conscious and not lose conscious, because most people, when they hit the light, they go unconscious and go into an automatic cycle of reincarnation in which you're pulled back to the exact polarities that you left with. In other words, you may not actually reincarnate with the same families, but you'll reincarnate with people with the same matrix you had, whether it be, you know, positive or negative. It's very possible, and I think everyone should practice how to die conscious and then be born conscious. That's going to really speed up evolution dramatically.
I
plan to do this. In fact, on my tombstone, I want it written, "Leave a message, I'll be right back."
He sure will be. Hey, Melon, of everything that you have experienced now in the course of this entire incredible journey, what's the one thing you've really pulled out of this that has affected you personally the most?
Well, can I read you a short poem? It's the first poem that I wrote after my near-death experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
It's called Invocation of Ecstasy. It's the first poem I wrote, and it is still my main vibration. And it goes like this. We who are here now are the creations of the first word. We who are here now are the rays of the first light. We who are here now are the star seed from the first garden. Let us open our hearts and look again. Just for a minute, let us open our hearts and let love rise more than we ever have before. Maybe even a little more than we ever thought possible. Look again, for deep in every human soul there is a knowing that all life is a gift beyond measure. That love, yes, love, is the heart, the breath, and the meaning of life. May there always be more love. May there always be more life. And may we all thrive and live forever, again and again and again. Oh, dear universe, I love my life.
Well said. And that has changed you.
Absolutely.
What do we say to people who haven't experienced what you've experienced? They haven't died. They haven't gone to the other side. Yet, they're entitled to have this kind of life now. They're entitled to know what you know. What do they do?
Everyone has direct access. Everyone is directly connected to the source that we all are. And there are many ways to get there. There are many ways to experience it. It is as natural as breathing. It's as natural as sunlight. What we have to realize is that we all do have that direct connection. And some can do it through meditation. Some can do it through song and dance. Some can do it. There's a million ways to do it. And no one is ever cut off or ever will be cut off from the source that we come from. And then to really focus it, we must, and this is a lesson I had to learn, you must come into a space where you love your life, and then everything can flow. And when I was told that by the light, I thought it was the most impossible thing in the world. How can I love my life? How? That's impossible. But I came to that point, and I love my life, and I always will.
People sense this when they meet you, too, don't they?
I think so, because this is what I really am. And I try to bring this this grace everywhere I go, although I am very much an imperfect human being, believe me. And I'm capable of just as many mistakes as anyone else. But I do, in my essence, carry this energy, and it really calms people down, and it seems to have an effect on people that's positive.
If, God forbid, you have another one of these experiences, do you want to stay on the other side, Melon, or do you want to come back?
No, we always come back, and I can't wait to get back, and because, you know, the other side's not all it's cracked up to be.
No, that's
there's
true,
a lot
too.
You can't do on the other side, and there's a perfect combination, though. A body without spirit is a wasteland, and a spirit without a body is a wasteland. And we are the perfect matrix of body and spirit. And with body and spirit, you can have it all.
You can have it all.
You can.
Yeah, you probably can. Let's get back just a few minutes about the health thing that you were talking about. George Burns lived, what, 100 years old, smoked cigars. What was it about his makeup that allowed that to happen?
Very little of it, and this is one of my major interests and studies over the last 27 years or so. Very little of it, maybe 3%, has anything to do with genetics, and most people whose parents lived to be 100, they don't. But if you look at the three main things that people that actually lived to be 100 have, diet is not a common factor because the diets are all over the ballpark. Dentistry is number one. Dentistry has been the plague of mankind because it poisons you. So 100-year-olds have good teeth or no teeth. And in Europe, like the Paracelsus Clinic, they can pull teeth and cure cancer.
Good point. I mean, I used to remember going to the dentist, and they'd ask you if you had a heart murmur or any kind of problems because the bacteria could kill you.
And so that's been the plague of mankind and our pets, too. So anything you can do to take care of your teeth is the best investment you can make. The second thing about 100-year-olds is, and forgive me for saying this, they stay away from doctors. and I've forgiven every doctor I ever thought was a jerk because we have to think about how we treat doctors. But the truth is that you shouldn't be a hypochondriac and you don't need to go get a flu shot. And I'm not giving any medical advice here, by the way. But they're not hypochondriacs. You have pains in your life. And a lot of the pains and aches in our lives are self-induced by all the little things that we do over a lifetime. And the third thing, which is really important, is people that live to be 100 have watched all their children and their friends die before them. These people always have something to live for.
Good point. Back with calls next. And here we are with our friend Melon Thomas Benedict and also your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, the good news is about all of this is more to the universe than life after death. You believe creation constantly begins, don't you?
Yes, I do.
All right, to the phones we go. Let's go to Danny in Stockton, California, first-time caller. Hi, Danny.
Hey, how you doing?
We're doing great.
Yeah, yeah. I got a question. I mean, I got a little theory about reincarnation.
Well, let's hear it.
All right, well, I consider, you know, like the light, as what you call the light, you know, because I believe, like, Aristotle, you know, I think it was, would come up with the atom, you know, where everything's made up of the energy, you know, atoms. And so everything's connected. I believe, like, the light is, like, encompasses everything. And so you take a little piece of that. I mean, you take a little piece of the light, but there's, like, a center, a core, which is the ultimate knowledge, to where if after you've been reincarnated enough, you become part of the core, and it's shaped like a ring or a ball with rings, with lives or souls, I guess you could say, that revolve around it almost, you know, and that you can pluck a little piece out of the core and put it somewhere to learn and to grow. And when it finally lives enough lives, you know, depending on the lives, it can advance in the ring and be sent back out when needed, but they only send out certain parts because you don't want to upset the whole balance of the whole, even with the core itself and where they're learning, until they can finally reach that center to help become bigger part of the whole, make the light bigger, encompass more.
Now, do you follow that, Melon?
Well, I tend to agree. Here's what I was shown, and I'm very much in agreement with this. There is a second part to the life review that hasn't been talked about, and that is, as you're having the life review, every minute and second of your life is being reviewed. It's being downloaded into that light, which is the core, the super mainframe. And so that means that every bit of your life, every day, every thought you've ever had is of universal importance to the rest of us. And the other part of the life review is that this is being downloaded into that central core, which is helping all of us grow. And so I tend to very much agree.
This life review that you witnessed, you know, when I was growing up, it was the old, there's a book of your life put right there in front of you. Did you see visuals of your life?
Oh, very much. Very vivid visuals. And not only that, I could also, if they involved people, I could see where they were coming from the first time, because we're all connected in this energy. And suddenly I could see where they were coming from. Now, you can do this normally if you pay attention. You can actually see where someone's coming from when they're doing things. But in the life review, I can actually see why my father was the way he was, why my mother was the way he was, and that quite often things that people do to you are not even about you. It's about their life. It's you could see it from all dimensions, which was pretty fantastic.
What is the purpose, Melon, of the life review? Why do we have to go through that?
It's a tremendous learning experience. The purpose is that there is no judgment whatsoever, and some people get shocked by this, but the only judgment you're ever going to experience is your own self-judgment during that life review, and as you go to the light, that is the only judgment you will ever know, and that can be pretty severe. You know, we're harder on ourselves than anybody else.
Well, that's true. Herb in Florida, welcome to Coast, east of the Rockies. Hi, Herb.
How you doing, George?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, I've called you before. You guys do a remarkable job. I mean, it's ever since I found your program, I have learned so much, and it's just been phenomenal. I have two questions for your guest.
Sure thing.
One, what 2012 wasn't mentioned. I was wondering if he had anything revealed to him about 2012. And two, when you asked him about the creation of the universe, I don't know, it just didn't gel with me, and I'm just kind of curious to what the actual creation was according to the light, because I don't think he really got into that.
All right.
Other than that, just keep up the good work, and God bless you.
We'll do it. Let's pick up the second one first, if you want, Melon. The creation of the universe, what's your take on that?
Well, you know, that is such a deep, deep subject. It would literally almost take forever to explain.
Four more
it.
Shows.
Yeah. So I plan to go to deeper into that in my book. And also, we all have a version of that, and you put all those versions together, and that is the truth.
Do you believe in the Big Bang Theory? Do you think there was a science behind it?
There was more than one Big Bang, I was shown. There are big fizzles that didn't quite...
Yeah,
like the universe had a fart, but it didn't quite, you know.
What about 2012?
2012 is definitely a signpost. Certainly not the end of the world. It's a cosmological signpost too, as a complete circle around the sun of our galaxy. Also, we're hitting we're going through the center of our plane now, which means there's going to be a lot more. Meteor showers and cosmic events and everything, but also it represents the ending of ancient prophecy. The last prophecy that there is that's legitimate is 2060, and that also dealt with the end of the world. And once we get past that, because there's been so many prophecies of the end of the world going through history, you can check this out, how many times people thought and were told by their leaders the world was going to end, including David Koresh, and it just goes on and on. we will finally wake up and realize that the world is not going to end anytime soon. And but these are signposts of the end of the end times. And certainly there are cosmological cycles and karmic cycles that we go through, because everything has a cause and effect once it is triggered. So really nothing to worry about. But I also say, be very, very careful of your world view and self-fulfilling prophecies. This is what got the Mayans, as their self-fulfilling prophecy. They believed the world was going to end, and it did for them, didn't it? The Spanish came along and that kind of took care of that. But so whenever I'm with someone who says they believe in the end of the world, and I say, do you really believe that? The first thing I do is get a stand away from them, because something's going to fall on them.
Let's go to our wild card line, Fairbanks, Alaska. Hello, Jeff. Your turn.
Howdy. Listen, I wanted to present briefly three separate approaches to the light and ask your guest for comment.
Well, let's start with one.
Then we'll start with one. When I was the summer I turned 17, I was learning to type, and I just got so bored with J-U-J, U-J, U-J, I thought, well, I'll start typing sentences. So I typed this. Line by line, I walked one morning into the sky. Soon it was passed up, and I was alone in the universe. As I stood, the stars and the rest disappeared, and I was more alone. Now there existed only my mind and the light that was not light. From nowhere there came a cold, hot wind, and it filled my soul with joy and awe, for I was become as a god and could understand eternity. I saw, after all, that eternity is omnipresent, that death is only an illusion. The rest, let's see, but only God and I really know this. The rest have not known eternity, and that is the key. Well, that was very upsetting to me, because I had no idea where it came from. No idea at all, and it would seem very strange. And then I realized, while I was listening once, drying dishes for my mom, that I was listening to Franck's D minor symphony, and I suddenly realized that was the first movement of the symphony. I had somehow transcribed it. Well, I thought that's a ridiculous notion, too. So I went to the World Book, and it says Belgian-born French composer and what? Mystic.
Was that you? It must have been.
What? You mean
in a reincarnated life, yeah.
Oh, heck, I don't know. But anyway, all of a sudden, the other two movements clicked into, by the way, if you're interested in the recording, it was Pierre Monteux and the Chicago Symphony, and it was gorgeous. But, you know, that was one. The second one, I was in a contretemps with my folks. I was getting out of, had dropped out of college in 1966, and my folks were upset. They were getting transferred from Anchorage. I was up in Fairbanks. They were getting transferred to Nellis Air Force Base. And basically, they kind of kidnapped me, and basically, I just escaped. And as I was escaping and going up what we call here Chino Ridge, I felt all the guilt ready to clamber down on me, and I just pushed back. I said, guilt later, action now. And so then I got hooked up at my piano teacher's house to stay after they got the troopers out, and I had a psychic friend, believe it or don't. And I know what you just said about psychics, but I had a guy who told me what my parents were doing, and then they came on the radio, and that's what they were doing. But anyway, I went to Anchorage while they came to, you know, they looked for me in Fairbanks, and I actually passed them on the road. But I was sitting at, I finally have a moment for reflection. Okay, now let's review the guilt. And I'm sitting out under this, like, 7-foot kind of sapling, birch sapling, and I'm on, it's called Farmer's Loop Road. I'm up, looking up the hill and seeing all the trees and the sunlight shining off them. And all of a sudden, it's as if I'm in a crystalline sphere in which everything is light, in which light illumines everything. It's as if there were, outside of everything I know, there's some big, purest, most intense, beautiful. So that was the first, that was like setting the stage.
And well, Mellon, he had a moment. I've got to move on here, Jeff. I'll let you listen here, though. He had a moment.
Oh, it was beautiful stories. He should be a writer.
I was going to say, let him write a chapter for you for your next work, if you ever do that.
Yeah, good job.
What happens to people, though, when they have these episodes that affect them so much individually? Now, in his case, he didn't have to die, but, you know, if he's composing all of a sudden and he never knew how to do that.
That is just wonderful, and I totally believe those events happen to everyone, and or can happen to anyone, and they're mystical events that are just glorious when they happen. So very cool, very cool.
David in Los Angeles, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hello, David.
Hello, George. Hello, Mellon. I love your program always.
Thank you, David.
And I'm so glad to hear your guest tonight, Mellon. What you're having to say just confirms my experiences. As I'm waiting on a hold here, I'm thinking, and there's no less than 8 times that I have experienced dear friends or loved ones who have passed on, and this has been confirmed down to the week. I can't pinpoint a day, but down to a week when they passed on, and they visited me to say goodbye. And I've felt their presence. I've acknowledged their presence. I've communicated with them, telepathy. Is that correct?
Well, whatever. Yep. Not bad.
Yeah, very bad.
They always communicate a sense of love, a sense of peace, and a sense of everything is okay.
Yeah,
I know there's other dimensions, but I don't know what dimension we go to. Perhaps you can shed some light on this.
What you're experiencing is very natural and quite common. These visitations can go on for quite a long time, even a lifetime sometimes, and can be very useful. Quite often, you can contact these spirits and ask them to help you do things, find out information for you. They can be quite the helpers to you, but it's quite normal to visit loved ones during the, especially during the short period right after their death. It's quite normal and actually quite common. So
has your experience, Mellon, made you so sensitive now that can you see the dead? Can you see spirits walking around?
I can, yeah. I'm kind of multidimensional that way. I can see them, I can hear them, I can feel them, and sometimes it's one or the other or all three, and depending on the situation. Certainly, I have some friends that have passed over that are still mentors to me and advise me.
There seems to be that connection where they have to come back. I don't know why, but they do.
It's love. Love is the most magical connection in the universe.
What if they didn't love before they died? Do they change?
That, yes, you can definitely change. That happened to me. It definitely can happen. Maybe it doesn't happen every time or this time. It may happen the next time, their next incarnation. But certainly, once you get that omni-view, multidimensional look at things, it's quite easy to forgive people. And to experience love, like I never really experienced love in my life until I had my near-death experience, and I was on the other side.
And it changed you dramatically.
Dramatically. Love does that.
Let's go to Indiana. Kelly, you're on Coast to Coast. Hello, Kelly.
Hi. Welcome. I had to call in because your guest made the comment about reincarnated people and families. They usually come back in their grandchildren.
Or in some kind of form or fashion like that, yes.
Yeah. Well, I have a story to tell.
Okay.
My father, when he passed away, he was very much a believer in reincarnation and all that. And he told me on his deathbed that if his calculations were correct, he would be back in about 10 years. And, of course, I didn't really know what to think about this. I was just like, okay, you'll be back then. Well, 4 children later, 9 years and 5 months to be exact, I had my 4th child. At the age of 2.5, she climbed up on my lap and put both her hands on my face and just beamed at me and said, I used to be your father. And you used to sit on my lap just like this.
Wow.
And
she was darn serious, wasn't she?
Oh, yes. And she's 9 now, but she's been so wise her entire life. I mean, I just look at her and I think, it's got to be. You know, she has to be my father. Because
How do you feel about that, Kelly?
Blessed. Yeah. Blessed, because my father had made many mistakes, and he felt like he had to come back to correct them. And I'm the youngest of seven children, and that he chose to come back to me for me to help guide him is a blessing to me. He always told me I was gifted. I've always had psychic abilities and been able to see ghosts and speak with them and stuff and have premonitions. And for him to come back to me was a great blessing to me.
That's a great story.
Great story. Just gives me goosebumps. Yeah.
Are you still coming up with inventions these days?
Oh, absolutely.
More and more?
I love inventing, and I love the flow. I invent every day, sometimes many inventions in a day, and they're all documented. But I know that in my life, probably only 2% of my inventions will ever be made into anything and do anything. But that doesn't matter to me because I love the flow. I love the experience.
And do you do it on paper, Melon, only, or do you try to, you know, physically make these?
Well, most everything is written down in great detail in drawings and things like that. And then the ones that I think are appropriate to put time and energy into, because let me tell you, inventing is, I wouldn't recommend it for everybody.
It's not cheap.
It takes a chunk of your life with each one of these. And so you try to pick the best ones and the most likely ones to make it and spend your time with those. And those, you know, you go into full development of patents, prototypes, and working models, and then manufacturing is a completely different experience. I'm amazed that anything makes it to the shelf in the store. You don't know how lucky you are just to walk into a store and pick up a bottle of aspirin. You don't know the trauma that went into getting
there.
That. And then we complain about the price.
We'll be back with final phone calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast with Mel and Thomas Benedict and your final phone calls as well. Melon, tell us, what do you do next? What's on your agenda these days?
Well, I'm continuing to invent and get my technologies out to people now. And my next round of inventions all have to do with energy devices, which the time is right.
For healing or for living?
For electricity.
Solar or...
No, I've brought in a lot of ideas for independent power production, simple, elegant ideas that people seem to be interested in now. And I was told I'd have to wait 20, 25 years for these inventions to come out, and it's about right. Now is about the right time because everyone is very interested in this subject right now.
So were you this creative prior to the near-death experience?
Not really. I was a very self-centered artist who had a very shallow life, actually.
All right, let's go back to the phones. First-time caller in Long Island, New York. Ro, you're on Coast to Coast.
Mel,
hi, Ro.
Hi, George.
Hi.
I was wondering if we're going to possibly be going into this time of freedom for mankind, how are we going to deal with some of man's unethical proclivities, such as violence, selfishness, greed, power issues, whatever?
Real issues that are really out there. Melon, we talked on this a little bit in the first hour, how through all this goodness, there's still a lot of greed out there and hatred.
Yes, and it's a process. We need more education now than ever before. We need conflict resolution taught to our children, and we really need to pay special attention to our children because it's in the cliche, but they really are the future. And, of course, America puts very little into their children. I think we're below some third world countries, actually. But we've got to put a lot of attention to our children. And someone asked me once why our children are shooting at us, you know, these drive-by shootings and everything. And I said, we're so dumb, they're trying to get our attention.
That could be. You never know.
We must pay attention to our children and give them everything they need.
How could a family not know that their children have assault weapons and guns in their room? How could they not know that?
Well, the families have become fractured because of survival. You know, both parents have to work now, and the families aren't as tight as they used to be, for sure. And, of course, the community isn't really supporting the children like it used to be in villages. And so they've gone wild. It's like Lord of the Flies.
I'm getting some emails from some people who want to know more about your light products and where you can get them. And they said they've gone to your website. They can't find anything. Is it there? Can they search for it?
Well, There is a website. It's called healthmatrixdistributors.com, and you can begin finding out information there.
All right. Let's go to Joplin. Dan, there you are. Hi, Dan.
Hey, buddy. This is Dan, the blind man of the angels. How you doing, buddy?
Good, Daniel.
Hey, I'm not going to keep you long. First of all, Melvin, in 1976, I used the power of my mind when I felt that there was no reason to live, and I shut all my body processes down, and that. But I was shown why to stay here, and I have also come to the conclusion that as I find my mate, that she needs to be a woman whom has also had a near-death experience.
Hmm.
Because we need to have that. So all you women out there, you ask around, and if you want to find me here, we can get together. I will be in touch with you, Melvin. I have already written something in Braille since the show began, and I have a menu of invitations for you, which does include a concept for an over-unity energy production device.
Great. I think you ought to start that near-death dating site. I think that would be great.
You never know.
George, can I read one more short poem before we go?
Only if you wrote it.
I did. And all right. It has a deal with what we're going through and what our country's going through right now, because we're basically, a lot of us are having to recreate ourselves, and a lot of us are having to start over, really. And so this is about that, and I hope it gives people some hope and encouragement. It's called Your Life, Your Way, Your Dance, and it goes like this. Dancing all around you and deep inside, time, life, and density change and change as the skins of past relations fall away. In this dance, all karmic plots are undone and rerun on the network of souls. Look at all the searching one does in body and spirit. You can climb Jacob's ladder. You can touch the face of God. And still, the fire of life will have its way. Deep inside your soul, the old self slowly burns away. And there, in the white ash and glowing darkness, a new self is being born in the beautiful night of your life. See the sparks fly from the phoenix fire, like shooting stars to wish on. So your life is a wish, and you are born again into the center of the dance. The dance is your life. You are the dance. Your life is the way in and the way out. Now more than ever, trust your life. Now more than ever, let go and grow.
There you go. Yep. Robert, Little Rock, Arkansas, you're on. First-time caller. Hello, Robert.
Yes. I've had three near-death experiences, and the end result was that I came out of mental illness. I'm not mentally ill anymore. And what I'm wondering is, I have... nasal implant, and did they put that there because I recovered? Are they helping me with it now after I've overcome mental illness? Why did they put that there?
I have no idea. I have no information on that. Sorry.
Okay. Let's go to Anita in St. Louis. Hi, Anita.
Hi, guys. Hey, Melon. Oh, hi. My gosh. I think... your message is, like, just so important right now for everybody, so I thank you for everything. I've had several near-death experiences, too, and what really struck me was that you talked about the understanding of reincarnation, and I was told the same thing, is that we're kind of in our infancy with our understanding, and that we all need to grow into learning that. Well, what I was taught was that we all come from the soul source. And the problem today is that the soul source has become contaminated. And so we have the essence of all of these souls that are combined, and pieces are broken off, okay, and thrown together to create a new soul. Comes back, reemerges down here. And it doesn't mean that we actually have lived maybe specific lives in the past,
But what I was explained was that we are in touch with every single life that ever was before. So, but the important thing to remember is that we're taking anger and hostility and hatred back to that soul source. And so that's why it's so critical and important for us to try and purge ourselves while we're here in this lifetime before we take it back, because it does reemerge back when we do reincarnate. And but we also, when we think that we are experiencing like a past life, we are drawn, say, to this explains why so many people think that they were Cleopatra.
Yeah.
Just like we walk up to the bestsellers in a bookstore, we grab the bestseller. And so that's where the confusion comes from. So anyway, we have to understand that we all really, truly are one. And if we wanted to take the time to learn how to do it, we could experience any life that has ever been before us. And so I just thought that that was fascinating, that you're, what you were told, you know, really jived with what I was explained. And sure. I thought I'd just share that with you.
And I think it's of utmost importance that we process our stuff before we die. It's very, very important to process things in the moment. Don't let them build up. Get clear and stay clear. It helps the rest of us immensely, including yourself.
You are not a believer in the heaven and hell concept, are you?
No. In fact, the heaven and hell concept is rather new in human history. It's, you know, there's not even a hell in the Old Testament.
Let's go to Norma in Downey, California, west of the Rockies. Hello, Norma.
Hi, George and Millen. I'm going to remain calm while I tell you this. The last 2 years, I've experienced four deaths.
Three
were human, and I can deal with that. I believe in reincarnation, and I know they were ready to go. The one I can't deal with is I had a Congo African gray parrot named Precious. I had her for 14 years. The last 10 years, I was retired, so it was just me and her. And she's been gone 17 months, and I still cannot cope.
And that's pretty young, Norma.
Yes, she
Those things last until they're 40, 50 years old, don't they?
Yes, and I thought I would die long before she did, and all the plans were made, the family she'd go to. I'd made recordings, so if she ever missed me, she could hear me. And she developed fungal tumors in her air sacs.
I used to have one, Norma.
Oh, did you?
And let me tell you, his name was Kiwi.
Oh.
And every time the phone rang,
he said hello.
It was him sounding like the phone.
Oh, that's great.
They are so smart. One morning I was standing at the fridge. She's on my left shoulder. I'm drinking orange juice out of the carton. And she turned her head and looked at me and said, "Do you like it?"
Oh, fantastic.
Yes. But honestly, there's not a day goes by I don't weep for her.
Why don't you get another one, Norma?
Oh, I'm 70 years old, and I just couldn't go through that. I can't open my heart to that kind of love again.
Well, you can still have a relationship with her.
How do I do that?
Even though she's in spirit. I tell you what, write my website and repeat this story, and I'll be sure to contact you.
Well, let's find out if she has a computer, first of all.
Yes, I do.
You do? Okay. All right, good. And his website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com, and he'll answer you. And good luck to you. It is amazing, the attachment of animals, huh?
Oh, it really is. I mean, the unconditional love they give you, and it's just astounding. I know. I love pets, and I'm without pets for the first time in my life, and we'll wait a couple more years before I reincarnate my dogs, but I'm going to bring them back.
This African gray was absolutely incredible with its ability to sound exactly like an individual or a doorbell. He would do a doorbell, and, you know, I'd go to the door. There was nobody there. It was him. San Antonio, Texas. Let's go to you, Fred. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi, Fred.
Hi, George. I want to say hi to your guest, too. Excellent guest. I have a question for your guest. Melon, I'm sort of going through change right now from my old life to a new one. And I feel like there's a breaking out that I need to be doing, but I'm kind of blocked. Do you have any advice you could give me?
Well, you've just got to the change that's about to happen to us all is not what we expect, because if it happens like we expect, it would only be a repeat of the past. So it's going to be totally new for you, and you've got to be open to that, and it will come in and manifest. But it will not be something like you expect to happen. It will be better and much more different than that. And because if what happens is what we expected, it's actually just a repeat of the past. So this is new territory for us all. We're all pioneers in this. This is new territory. So be an explorer and trust your life. Really trust your life now.
How far advanced are we as a nation compared to other countries where their population dabbles in this as well?
Well, you know, I've traveled the world, and Americans live in a very special bubble. We really do. Most Americans don't realize that. It's very different in different countries. I was in Sweden in 2007, and they never had it, what we call a New Age movement or this kind of movement, although they have their own version of psychic stuff. England's very different than we are, and I think probably 50 years ahead of us in this. And then the ancients were right on the money. You know, the Aborigines and the people like that were in totally in tune. The Kahunas, totally in tune. Americans got off in La La Land. I've often thought the name of America ought to be Disneyland. That's the true nature of America.
You claim that you're a shaman. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, and I've been a shaman in many past lives, and the type of shaman I am is the adventurer, and I've had many adventures in my incarnations, and I love to learn, and I also help in any way that I can, and I have found that living the shamanic life, everything is a work of magic to me, and everything is, even death is just another excuse for a ceremony.
I was at an event called 2012 Quantum Leap in L.A. Last month, and a lama from Tibet had come out, and he was there with his son. And Melon, this guy had spent 23 years by himself in a cave. Now, people would bring him food, and they'd lay it down there, and he'd go out and get it. But 23 years he was out there by himself, and he finally emerged into the world. And I got to tell you, call it what you want, lama, shaman. I couldn't do that. Could you?
No, I think that's easy life. I mean, try getting married, having children. And I believe all the higher beings, the Pope and the Dalai Lama, should be having lots of children. They should be bringing in higher spirits, and they've chosen not to. I don't get it. But, you know, actually, you know, that kind of life is a very easy life. And but I say, you know, you want a real test of life, you know, have a relationship, have children, make a family. And give the world a gift of well-balanced children for the future. All of these higher beings should be having lots of children.
I've always questioned, for example, marriage counselors who have never been married.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
You got to be there if you're going to give people advice.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, do me a favor. You've got a pre-order phone number. I have it. Do you need it? 800.
Me?
Yeah, you got it out here?
Oh, yeah, it's 1-800-BOOKLOG, and or you can go to Amazon.com, and there'll be the two books, Journey Through the Light and Back, and then The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Other Side, which is a handbook. The subtitle to it is It's Hitchhiker's Guide to the Other Side, or What to Do If You Wake Up Dead. It's a handbook.
Which I hope doesn't happen to us for a very long, long time.
But it's
Melon,
really a,
thanks.
It's really a book to go into your subconscious. So if you have a near-death experience or you have a death experience, you can have a handle on it.
Excellent. Take care. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.